ॐ का वायम चाकुलनंदना देहाकृतो नम कृत्रानम आत्मा नारक हेतवे। O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you the state of Lanka and also we ourselves now have no protector. By your deeds you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures and your soul fit to go to hell. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who follows the path of Ravana is condemned in two ways. His body is fit to be eaten by dogs and vultures, and the soul goes to hell. As stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Tan aham dvishatha kruran samsareshu naradhaman Shipham vajasram asubham asurishvevat yonesu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Thus the destination of godless atheists such as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kangsha, and Dantavakra is a hellish condition of life. Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, could understand all this because she was a chaste woman. Although lamenting for the death of her husband, she knew what would happen to his body and soul. For although one cannot see directly with one's material eyes, one can see with the eyes of knowledge. Pashyanti jnana chakshusha. In Vedic history, there are many instances of how one becomes godless and is condemned by the laws of nature. O pleasure of the Rakshasa dynasty, because of you, the state of Lanka, and also we ourselves, now have no protector. By your deeds, you have made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul fit to go to hell. Beautiful narration of the words of Mandodari, the wife of Ravana, as she is speaking to the soul of Ravana. His body laying dead on the battlefield, his heart having been pierced by the invincible arrow of Lord Sri Ramchandra. Mandodari is speaking words of great wisdom. Being the wife of Ravana, and thus one of his most intimate associates, she knew his heart from within and without. Mandodari was always the well-wisher of Ravana. Although, by the will of destiny, by her karma, ultimately by the arrangement of superior powers, she had accepted the most cruel-hearted and demoniac Rakshasa, Ravana, as her husband and as her protector. But we find by her devoted words that she herself was a very pious and a God-conscious woman. How is that possible? Throughout the episode of Ravana kidnapping Sita, Mandodari, not as an envious wife, but as a sincere well-wisher, was continuously, at every opportune moment, telling Ravana to return Sita and surrender to Ram. But of course, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So similarly, Mandodari, her devoted and sacred words were like, as they say, throwing pearls before the swine. We find a very similar situation in the life of Prahlad Maharaj. He was also in the family of Asuras. He also had a very personal and intimate relationship with the king of the Asuras, Hiranyakashipu. And like Mandodari, he was also always giving good advice. He was always explaining to his father that if you really want to be happy in this world, you have to give up all your pursuit of material pleasures. You should go to a holy place. You should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be his humble servant, and always chant his holy names. And Hiranyakashipu was outraged by the insulting words of his son. So here we find, amongst family members of the greatest demons, that they had no power to influence even their own dependents, although they did have the power to conquer the entire world. We find here Hiranyakashipu, he literally conquered the entire universe and brought everyone under his control, including great sages. But because his son, Prahlad, who was only at the time 5 years old, was a devotee of the Lord and was protected by the Lord, he could not influence his mind. And his own son was fearlessly preaching to him the message of the Supreme Personality of God. And similarly, in the life of Ravana, it is very similar. His own younger brother, Vibhishan, and his own wife, Mandodari, were completely against his mission and his demoniac activities. Vishan because he was a man. Ultimately, he rejected his brother and went to the side of Ram to fight for him. And Vibhishan was one of the greatest assets to the army of Ram, because he was like the intelligence agency of the army of Sri Ram, in the sense that he knew inside and outside everything about the entire Rakshasa army, everything about the tactics that they were trained to use in warfare, and he knew the strengths and the weaknesses of all their greatest, most powerful soldiers. And he was constantly giving advice to Ram on how they should be killed. It was Vibhishan that gave the information of how the strengths and weaknesses of the great Kumbhakarna. Similarly, it was Vibhishan who gave the strength, the information of how that great mystic brother of Ravana, what was his name? Indrajit is somebody else's brother. Miravana? It was he that gave all the information of how he must be killed and what his powers were. And it was also he that explained to Lakshman and Ram about the great sacrifice that Indrajit was about to perform to become invincible, and explained how Lakshman could intervene between he and that sacrifice and slay him. So Vibhishan, the blood relative of the Rakshasa Ravana, became his greatest enemy, because he was fearless due to his being blessed by the mercy of Ram. So Mandodari here, she is weeping over the death of her husband. But behind her tears, she is speaking great wisdom. That, my husband, what you have done in your life, I am not at all proud of you. In fact, if you want to know my opinion, because of the way you lived, your body is simply fit to be eaten by dogs and vultures, and your soul will go to hell. Ravana, due to lust and pride, acted in so many ways, but even the nearest and dearest to him were not at all impressed. Rather, they were disgusted with his life. And of course, Ram himself, he knew that Ravana was not an ordinary Rakshasa, but he was born in a family of Brahmins. He was a Brahmin Rakshasa. And therefore, he had Vibhishan perform the funeral ceremony, which was appropriate for the occasion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very strictly condemned any Vaishnav to consider a person's spiritual qualities on the basis of one's birth. In fact, throughout the scriptures, This is repeated. Satkarmani pano vipro mantra tantra vasharada avaishnava guru nasya vaishnava svapacho guru. This means if one is born in a Brahmin family, but he is not a sincere devotee of the Lord, he cannot even deliver himself, what to speak of anyone else. But if one is born in the lowest caste, the most condemned family of meat eaters and dog eaters, if he is a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, he can not only deliver himself, but such a person is fit to deliver the entire world. Also, Lord Kapila Dev has said that if one is even born in a family of meat-eating dog-eaters, if he sincerely chants the holy name of the Lord, he should be given the same respect and more than one who is born of the highest Brahmins. And he is fit to perform all the ceremonies of a Brahmin. All the rituals, all the pujas, he is qualified. And of course, Arche Vishnu Shiladir Guru Shu Naramatir Vaishnavi Jati Budhi. That one who considers Arche Vishnu Shiladir Guru Shu, one who considers the deity of the Lord, the Archamurti, as made of stone or wood, one who considers the spiritual master to be an ordinary man, and one who considers a Vaishnava to belong to any particular caste or any particular any particular material classification. Such a person, his intelligence and his mind is in hell. This is the word of the Shastra. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came especially to propagate the glories of the holy name, he made the acharya of the holy name, Haridas Thakur. Why Haridas Thakur? It is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he was actually Lord Brahma. He was the purest devotee in the universe from the highest planet. But by the will of the Supreme, he was born in a family of Malechas and Javanas. That means those who are utterly averse to Vedic civilization, and those who are addicted to all abominable activities. According to the traditions of India at the time, that if somebody from such a family walks by your house, you are supposed to wash your entire house with water. You have to pour out any water that's already there, and you must take bath and chant the names of God just to neutralize the sins that have been transmitted by that person's presence. And just recently, and perhaps even today, amongst Orthodox Hindu families, they follow this principle. I remember when I was living in Vrindavan, one of the great spiritual masters of the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya was telling me that his father was just like this. They were from the East Bengal. They were Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He was Gaudiya Vaishnav. His father was a very Orthodox Brahmin Hindu. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken someone from the lowest of the low families and put him in the highest position. And Advaita Acharya, who was none other than Mahavishnu, the leader of all the Brahmins of Shantipur, at the time of the Shraddha ceremony, where you are meant to select the highest, the purest of all Brahmins, and give him the first portion of Vishnu's prasad, he chose Haridas Thakur. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to prove a very, very emphatic point by doing this. That if one takes to the chanting of the holy name sincerely and surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is the greatest offense to consider such a person according to any materialistic designations. And to emphasize this in such a way, the greatest of all the bhaktas of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Mahapurana, one of the 12 Mahajans, is Prahlad Maharaj. Narada Muni, he himself, in his previous birth, he was the son of a maidservant, Asudra. But by his association with other Vaishnavas, he came to the highest platform of pure love of God and became Narada Muni. And he explains to Maharaj Yudhisthira that wherever there is an assembly of great souls, it becomes auspicious when the name of Prahlad is remembered. And this will be the rule that will go on for the rest of eternity. So what is the greatness of the position of Prahlad? But what was the family that he was born in? It was a family of Rakshasas. He was a full-blooded Rakshasa by birth. Full blood. Rakshasa means those persons, not only are they below Brahmins, but they eat Brahmins. Not just somebody who eats dogs, but who eats humans. And practically anything else and everything else. Recently, after one of our programs downstairs in the patio, one man was talking to one of our devotees who was going to Hong Kong to give some lecture. And he said, you are going to Hong Kong, such a horrible place. You know what I have seen in Hong Kong? When I was there, I saw in the marketplace people growing and cultivating insects. And I asked, what do you do with these insects? He said, we eat them. I said, what an abominable culture that they eat insects. I said, such an abominable culture right here in Bombay. At night, if you go on the roads, you will find the herding of thousands of cows. What are you going to do? They are eating them right here. Eating goats and eating sheep. Meat eating is becoming prominent throughout India. That is millions of times more abominable than eating insects. What to speak of Prahlad Maharaj's whole family? They would eat humans and anything below. In fact, Prabhupada said that for those who have discovered, human flesh is the most tasteful and the most tender. So if you're simply interested in satisfying your senses, human flesh is very good. And therefore the Rakshasas, they would feast on human flesh. That means they cared nothing for murdering another man if they liked the taste of his body. Such an abominable birth, such a horrible atmosphere that Prahlad was brought up in. But yet, he is celebrated as the guru for every one of us. We read his words, and even the greatest purest acharyas, they worship his lotus feet. And we find in some of the greatest temples in all of India, in the world, we find the Murti of Prahlad installed. And here we have in the Ramayana the same theme very strongly emphasized. Who were Ram's most confidential devotees? Sugriva, Hanuman. They were not even human. They were born in a family of animals. And yet throughout all of India, they installed the beautiful Murti of Hanuman as the Param Bhakta. So who are the greatest Param Bhaktas? Prahlad and Hanuman. They were both outcasts by all social designations. One was born in a family of subhumans and animals. The other was in a family of Rakshasas, the most ferocious, abominable criminals. And who else helped Ram? There was Ram and Lakshman, who was Krishna and Balaram. And all of his associates were either monkeys or rakshasas. His entire army, there was the monkey army and there was Vibhishan. And he conquered the ignorance of Ravana's domain with the help of them. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the West, he compared himself to Lord Ram in the sense that he was his representative. And he said, and similarly, we have the same mission as Ram, to win back Sita, the goddess of fortune. And he said, and who has he given me to help me? He said, all of these monkey-like disciples who are coming from low births. And he brought them to India. And he told us that India is now completely under the influence of Ravana, materialistic civilization. He said, you have to become like the monkey soldiers. You have to bring Sita back to Ram. Bring the spirit souls back to the lotus feet of Ram. Oh, this is the mission of all of us. We should not be proud that I am Brahman, or I am of this caste, or I am of that caste, or I am born in Bharatvarsha. We should be proud of only one thing, that by the mercy of our spiritual master, we are given the opportunity to render humble service to the Supreme Personality of God. That is our only qualification. Whoever we are, our only qualification is the mercy of the spiritual master. Here we find people like Hanuman and Vibhishan and Prahlad. They were very humble. They admitted that we are the lowest of the low. But then you also have the greatest of the Brahmins, such as Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. But they had the same feeling, that we are the lowest of the low. So we were born in these high families, but what is our qualification? If anything, Our high birth is a disqualification because the tendency of this birth is to make me proud. The Lord is more pleased by humility than any sort of gross or subtle blood that's flowing in our body due to our birth, due to our training. A real high birth is a birth that trains one to be a humble servant of the Lord. A real high birth is one that teaches you how to respect and honor the God in the heart of every living being. Therefore, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhat Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they were born in Saraswat Brahman families of the highest order, and they had best training, but they considered themselves the lowest of the low. They consider that we only have one qualification, and that is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the mercy of our spiritual master. And in whatever situation we are in, high or low, educated or uneducated, we should not consider that these things at all are qualifications for spiritual life. They may be qualifications for particular types of service, but they are not qualifications for service itself. They are not qualifications in any way, shape, or form for pleasing the Lord. The only qualification for pleasing the Lord is humility and the willing to engage in devotional service by humbling oneself between the Guru and the sadhus. By trying to please the Guru, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kuto. When Krishna's representative is pleased, then Krishna is pleased. And if his representative is not pleased, you cannot please Krishna, no matter what you do. And the representative, the authorized representative of Krishna, is only pleased by the spirit of humility and devotion. How much you are willing to enthusiastically serve him without expectation of profit or honor or any of these other materialistic things, but simply to serve. Of course, Ravana, he's being told by his wife two apparently contradictory statements, which is very interesting to study. In the previous verse, she says, Mahabhaga. She addresses her husband as, O greatly fortunate one. And then the next verse she says, Atma naraka hetave, that your soul will go to hell. So how is he fortunate if his soul is going to hell? Who can say? I'd like to ask you this question. In two consecutive verses, one she says that he is fortunate, and the next she says that your soul will go to hell, and your body will be eaten by dogs and vultures. You see, his soul was fit to be go to hell because of what he had done. That was what he earned in his karma in life. But he was greatly fortunate because he was killed by the hands of Ram. And therefore, he naturally was in the presence of Krishna or Ram at the time of leaving his body. But at the same time, he wasn't liberated And he did not go back to Godhead. Because, as you know, Jai and Vijay were cursed for three births as demons. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana Kumbhakarna. So he had one more birth as demon, Dantavakra and Shishupal. And to become a demon is like to go to hell. Right? The body, just like the heart of a devotee, that heart is actually the kingdom of God, because God is always worshipped there. It is, we say the kingdom of God is within, do we not? So the heart of a great devotee, that heart is none different than Vrindavan, Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God. So similarly, the heart of a demon is none different than hell, because it is a place where hellish desires, where hellish ambitions are surrounding you in all directions. So because Ravana had to take another birth in the heart of a demon, in a demoniac heart, therefore his soul had to go to hell. But he was greatly fortunate because he was killed by Ram, and therefore he was on his way back to Godhead. He was on his way for his return trip to Vaikuntha. See, when he was cursed to come to the material world, Jai and Vijay, they were given a round-trip ticket. So therefore he is most fortunate. And we consider him very, very fortunate. In fact, Narada Muni was considering Shishupal, the next birth of Ravana was Shishupal, who was killed by Krishna. And just as Mandodari is saying that her husband is most fortunate after being killed by the Lord, so similarly, Narada Muni was explaining that Shishupal was also most fortunate, because by always remembering the Lord, being killed by the hands of the Lord, his destination was all auspicious. So this is the glory of the mercy of Krishna. And just as the holy name, or just as Ram killed Ravana with the arrows from his mighty bow and delivered him of all of his hellish consciousness, and just as Krishna killed that same being in his form of Shishupal and killed his hellish condition of life, so similarly Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come in this age of Kali to kill the demoniac qualities within all of our hearts with the sound of his holy name. So if someone is born in a very, very pious and Brahmin family but does not take shelter of the holy name, great sages like Narada Muni would not consider him very fortunate. He considered Ravana and Shishupal fortunate because they were vanquished by the weapon of the Lord. So similarly, whoever we are, even if we are Rakshasas, don't worry about it. If you are willing to be conquered by the name of Krishna, if you allow the spiritual master to shoot the flaming arrow of the holy name into your heart, take that name into your life, then you are most fortunate. All of your Ravana qualities will be vanquished. You will go back to Godhead. Is there any questions? Yes. They were liberated. They went back to Godhead. But they came back. They made a humble request to Vishnu that let us go back one more time. Because if you are appearing as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is the sweetest, most wonderful pastime. We want to be killed again. But this time by the holy name. And once and for all we can go back, we can remain in the Godhead. Any other questions?
Yes.
It has been observed by, I think, overall we can say that Mishra becomes a devotee or healthy the devotees. By their action, by their preaching, many other people get convinced by it. It's all the society, all the people get convinced by his action, by his preaching and everything. But when we see their life, or when we see their family is not even convinced by them. The family is just opposite to them. Why is it so that they cannot convince their family, or they cannot convince the family, but they can convince the full society? What is wrong with that actually? Because I see almost those big souls, including Pralhad Maharaj, including Ramadas, all of them, they cannot convince their family. But the whole society has been getting convinced by their philosophy, by their preaching, by their action. Why is it so that intimate people who are knowing everything about it, they cannot get convinced by it? Other people, they are very short. So this is association that they get convinced.
Advaitacharya had 6 sons. 3 were great devotees and 3 were Mayavadis. Prabhupada had several sons also. Today one of them is still trying to sue the movement to try to get the property for his sense gratification. Prabhupada tried for years to get his wife and his children to help him in his guru's mission. They just simply were not interested. They were devotees, they were pious, but they just weren't interested in surrendering. So Prabhupada left them, and in a matter of months, he made thousands of people Krishna conscious. When he came to the West. Because everyone has their freedom, everyone has their independence. But another thing is this, another thing is this, that Krishna is obviously also trying to show us through this example that we should not be so attached to the bodily conception of life and family. Prabhupada said that I left a wife and a few children thinking, what will I do without my family? And now he has given me such a better family. Obviously Krishna has arranged throughout history this just to show the world that you should be attached to Krishna, and you should be attached to the devotees of Krishna as your supreme real family. And even the greatest souls, they were always the well-wishers, but you cannot. Familiarity breeds contempt as well. It is not a matter of physical proximity, but it is a matter of a receptive heart. In the same sense, Prabhupada had so many personal servants, and many of his personal servants are not even in the movement of the Krishna consciousness movement anymore. And there are other people who only saw him once or twice, never even talked to him directly, and they're some of the most powerful, inspired preachers whose lives are completely sold at his lotus feet. So it is not a question of physical proximity that qualifies us. It is not to the extent that even if you are a family member, it is a question of the receptivity of the heart and the desire to serve.